The first lesson today is from the 38th chapter of Job. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. Who is that that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up your loins like a man. I will question you, and you shall declare to me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together, and all the heavenly beings shouted for joy. Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band and prescribed bounds for it and set bars and doors and said, thus far shall you come, and no farther, and here shall your proud waves be stopped. The second lesson for today is from the fourth chapter of Mark. On that day, when evening had come, and he said to them, let us go across to the other side. And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. Other boats were with him. A great gale arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him up and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace, be still. Then the wind ceased and there was a dead calm. He said to them, why are you afraid? Have you still no faith? And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
I was talking to a fellow, not to a fellow pastor, but to a pastor. He was asking me, we were talking about this Sunday, and he was asking what I was going to preach on, because he knew I was going to be here at First Pres. He said, I'm going to preach on the Markan text. And I said, yeah, I'm going for Job. And he said, ooh. Job is never really that fun of a book to preach on, but it's one of my favorite books of the Bible. Maybe that says something about me, or maybe that says something about life. Either which way, I went for the more difficult text, so bear with me. The book of Job really has a nice storyline, and it's so difficult. One of the reasons it's so difficult to preach from is that you really need to see the arc of the story to embrace the book as a whole. And the story starts like this, and I'm going to give myself a little liberty with the text. So God and Satan were playing poker, which is not in the text, but God and Satan were playing poker. And, you know, it was their Wednesday poker night, and they were talking about what was going on. They both got their fat cigars. And God says to Satan, so have you noticed Job? He's a winner. He's pretty cool. He obeys my laws. And Satan says, yeah, well, but Job's got it pretty easy. Lots of wives, lots of wealth, lots of sons, a few daughters. You know, so I'd be faithful too. He gave me some of that. So God says, fine. You can strip those from Job. I'll let you have Adam. Just don't hurt Job yourself. So Satan does it. I mean, within a few days, all of Job's servants have come to him and basically said, all of your worldly possessions, all of your children, gone. And yet, Job doesn't curse God. So Satan comes back and says, well, the thing is, God, our bet's still not really fair because you didn't let me go after Job. You know, everyone else suffered, but he's still intact. So God says, fine, go after Job. You can do anything you want to him, but you can't kill him. So Satan says, fine. At the end of this, Job will curse you. So that's how basically the book of Job starts. And then the arc of the story is Job is kind of trying to figure out this situation with his friends. And his friends tell him, you know, you must have done something, because not all of this stuff happens so quickly if you haven't done something. And they grieved with him like friends should. They tore their clothes. That must be a thing, because Job had, you know, taken off his clothes too. So apparently they were wallowing in this all semi-nude for 7 days, didn't talk, no one spoke a word. And then they were trying it one at a time to kind of figure out the reason that this had all fallen onto poor Job. The text points, and I was trying to figure out what can illuminate in our lives what Job had gone through. And the easiest thing, the thing that comes easiest to mind, is a comedy bit that was true by a woman named Tig Notaro. I believe she has a television show now. Has anyone heard of the comedian Tig Notaro at all? Okay. Yeah. So she gets diagnosed with cancer, and it's up to her to decide whether or not she's going to go on and do her set 3 days later. And she says to herself, I have to do this set because for all I know, it's the last set I'm going to do. And so she kind of, like Job, unrobes herself in front of others. So there's a parallel there. But this is what happened to poor Tig. So first she was struck with pneumonia. She got better. Within a few weeks, she had a condition, an intestinal tract condition, where this bacteria was literally eating her intestines. It can be fatal. So she was in the hospital for that, for like a week. She lost 20 pounds. A week after that, her mother dies. Her 65-year-old mother dies of a freak accident. Tripped, fell, hit her head, brain dead. Tig's in the hospital with her 65-year-old mother, knowing that she didn't get to say some of the things that she wanted to say to her mother. So Tig is sick. Her mother is attacked. And then Tig, who's a lesbian, gets dumped by her girlfriend, who picks, I guess, a great time. Really goes for the gut there. And then just a couple of weeks after that, Tig is diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer. So this has all happened within a very short period of time. And she kind of comes to the same conclusion in her sketch, which she does in front of, you know, this audience, not knowing really where it's going to go. And you can tell there's kind of a tension with the audience, too. Is she really exposing all of this? Is there some kind of moral that's going to come out of this? No, this is just what happened to this woman. She's letting it all out there, and she doesn't know where it's going to go. But she also talks about what she felt like with what it was like with God. And she imagined, you know, the angels looking at this scenario, saying to God, don't give her any more. leave her a be. Have you gone crazy, God? Why would you do this? And God saying, I don't know. I think she can take some more. Which finally then kind of pushes her over. So she said this is what it feels like when someone says God never gives you more than you can handle. So apparently God was trying to push her to the brink, which is essentially what Job's friends were saying. God's trying to push you, trying to get you to learn something from this. But Job says, I just don't get it, though. I just don't get it. I have been righteous. I'm racking my brain. I don't understand what it is. And I can't get away with doing no exegesis in this sermon. So this is the exegesis. I had to look up this understanding of righteousness. Because in the book of Job, that's really what's at stake. Is Job righteous or isn't he? And the ancient Hebrew understanding of righteousness, the word, was tzedek. And it was almost a legal term. So it didn't mean to be without blame. It meant to be whether or not the court, the judge, found in your favor. So if you go into a courtroom, people have an argument, the judge says, well, you're righteous, you're, you know, in good legal, moral standing, and you're not, you lose. So basically what his friends were saying, if you look at it that way, it's nuanced, but there's a big difference. So in other words, it's not something that Job has done, it is how Job has been found. So the question is, has God found Job in the right? His friends say no, Job says yes. So again, righteousness to the minds of Job and his friends is not blamelessness, or what we would call sin, or whether he was without sin. It was he within his bounds? Was he on really the right path? Was he still on God's path? And Job was saying, yes, you were. His friends were saying, You're kind of the moral loser in this courtroom debate. So where we pick up in today's text is Job finally hears from God. So he's got all of his friends' little commentaries. And then one of his friend's sons speaks up and says, you guys have it all wrong, okay? I know this isn't my place, but I'm just going to tell you why you're wrong. So he kind of rips Job. And then suddenly God shows up. And you'd think at this point God would show up and say, hey, just kidding, Job. Way to go. because we know at the end, Job wins, right? Everything is doubled for him. The sermon about why everyone else in Job's life dies is not this one. I know it's unfair. Anyway, so Job is coming to the point where God finally shows up for Job. And God goes to great lengths to create beautiful imagery about how wonderful and powerful God is from the beginning of time, and how small Job is in comparison to that. So in other words, Job, who are you to question all of this? You don't see the big picture here. So Job may still be in the moral right, but that doesn't mean there's not a lesson for him. Now, the theological question that comes up here, and really this where the story takes us and asks us, is this started with a bet, right? It started with a bet between Satan and God, and God would be well served to help Job, because then God wins the bet. But God didn't do that. God said, I'm not done with this game. Satan is out of it. In fact, we don't hear about Satan for the rest of the book. Satan never comes back. It's now at this point, God and Job. So God says all of this to Job, but where is God? God just explained how great God is and how little Job sees. But where is God? God is talking to Job. God is right next to Job in this wondrous world, universe, all times, places. God is haggling with his servant Job. Why? For Job. God is for Job. At the end, that's kind of what God says. You had a vision of what our relationship was, and you knew that you were in the right. But now you see me more clearly. You see your path more fully. You see the color that abounds. I really liked one of the verses which talked about Job going from a place of hearing but not also seeing. So Job kind of had it half right. And that really speaks, the Old and New Testament seem a little disjointed to us. But that's really kind of what Jesus says too, isn't it? I mean, not to project, but Jesus is telling us we don't see the whole picture. And that is exactly what God is doing with Job in this passage. You're not seeing the whole picture. And now this has come to fruition. So what does that mean for us? What we find out from that passage is not that God wants to win a poker war or a race with Satan. As I said, Satan disappears. God is in it with Job. God lets Satan have it, Job, and says, my bet's on Job. I'm staying with Job. And not only am I staying with Job, I'm using this as an opportunity that could be one of tragedy to enrich my relationship with Job. And I argue that that is what God is doing with us every day. So if you're going through something difficult and someone says, God doesn't give us more than we can handle, I would say that's not true. You can just tell them that's bad theology. Thanks, but no thanks. But you can say, maybe God is using this as an opportunity, even though it's not right, because what happened to Job just isn't right. But the fruit of what was not right and not fair was beautiful. It was an enrichment. God used it. So let's hold that God has that faith in us, And let's hold that and view, and in light of our relationships with one another, use it as an opportunity of grace, a way to wake up every day with new eyes, saying, I heard, yeah, but I didn't see. Today is an opportunity to see what I could not see before. God, myself, and others. That is the healing that God offers us in the midst of terrible circumstance. So I'm going to end this sermon with what was on the cover of your bulletin. I found that Martin Luther had said, and I thought it was great. Quote, this life, therefore, is not righteousness, but growth in righteousness, not health, but healing, not being, but becoming, not rest, but exercise. We are not yet what we should be, but we are growing toward it. The process is not yet finished, but it is going on. I invite you to go on with one another with Christ. Amen.